This episode is about minutes 56 through 60 of Solo, A Star Wars Story, featuring returning guest, Tony Thaxton. Hello there, and welcome to Star Wars Music Minute, where we celebrate the music and sound of Star Wars 5 cinematic minutes at a time. I'm Chrysanthi Tan, feel free to call me Xanthi, and today is all about minutes 56 through 60 of Solo, A Star Wars Story, which is basically Han and Lando at the Sabacc table. Who knows what will happen? We also see a lot of aliens, and it's a good time at the Fort Ipso Lodge. I'm really excited to have you back, Tony. You're like the resident punk rock podcaster.
Thank you. Glad to be back. And I'm going to apologize right up front. I hope my lighting isn't too bad. I have a ring light, and the last couple times you tried to use it, it's like burned out within like the first minute of recording. So I'm like, I'm not even going to try today.
So. Oh my God. Ring lights are so intense. Yeah. Well, you look fine to me.
Well, thank you.
And you have
your lighting looks much better. When I see it side by side, I'm like, oh, I can't compete with this, but you know, I'm doing what I can. So back off, man.
You have a lot of guitars in the background hanging on the wall, so that kind of gets two. I don't know, that's two more than I have. I have a stark white wall. That kind of gets us into the mood of this lodge that we're in.
Yeah, all the guitars on the wall there. Yeah.
So you're here on this episode specifically because you are, I consider you the biggest Therm Scissor Punch fan out of everyone I know.
Well, I think I would like to think probably the biggest one out there. You know, if you could see this side of, if you see the other side, like this wall is just covered with nothing but Therm photos and toys. And
oh wow, the obsession runs deep.
I wish that was true. Is there a single Therm Scissor Punch toy?
I have no idea.
I don't think I've ever seen any merch. No Therm merch out there.
Well, will we hear
I've already
Therm?
Derailed your show.
Well, one thing that I'm really interested in these minutes is all the different sounds that the aliens make.
Mm-hmm.
Not Therm isn't my favorite sound, but we'll get to the one that is my favorite sound. Why don't we get warmed up by like listening to a little bit of it?
Okay.
Sorry,
guys. Close, but not quite. A little rebel fanfare.
Eyes on your own cards, buddy. All of them.
So there's an alien.
Well, now I see yours.
Okay, so already in... Tell me your thoughts of like what's happening here, either in the scene or in the music or the sound. Like what's the mood here? What sticks out to you?
I feel like, I'm not sure, the music definitely has kind of like a playfulness to it to me, but also in a way that doesn't feel very Star Wars-y. Which I mean, that's as time is going on, I feel like having a Star Wars-y sound to the music is almost like not a thing anymore because they're starting to go off in other directions with some of these shows and everything, which I'm cool with. I think that the Mandalorian stuff like took some getting used to, I think, but I it's grown on me though. So like I understand the branching out and everything, but there's something like about this in particular until like you hear the little like flutes come in or something that kind of have some familiar Star Wars to it. Until that, it like almost has like the music almost makes me think of like a romantic comedy or something.
Okay, I'm glad that you named that because obviously it's not about whether you're picking up on something, whether it's Star Wars or not. It diverges from the Star Wars that came before it, so it is different from Star Wars that came before it. And I'm picking up on that as well. And I'm also picking up on the romantic comedy-ness of it. What I actually think it sounds like is like a TV show about like a comedic but edgy TV show, like Weeds or something.
Right. Uh-huh.
That's what that reminds me of. And actually, I pulled a few examples from Orange is the New Black to compare it with. Uh-huh. And maybe we can just go straight there. I mean, I was like wondering how we would get into that conversation, but you're kind of already diving right into it. So if you're following along on the soundtrack, this is the track called Is This Seat Taken on the regular version of the soundtrack. And it's the same thing on the deluxe soundtrack called Sabacc Game 3M25. So it's not a diegetic track, but it is more like there is more of a rhythmic drive and more of an almost, well, I mean, even if I just keep playing, you'll hear.
Oh, okay. Sorry, -2.
Like the background feels so.
This game is fun. All right, how about this?
It's like repetitive.
You bet.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll raise you.
It's like definitely there's like a drum loop too.
Yeah.
Can you tell what drums are happening there?
No.
I can't. Does it sound like electronic drums?
Maybe. Like, to be honest, I wasn't like zoning in too closely on them. So I'm sorry. I failed you.
You failed me as a drummer. No, I'm just kidding.
Get used to it.
Well, okay. Let's listen to the...
Oh, great hand.
Okay, it's going like... Okay, so I'm going to play something from Orange is the New Black now. This is a track called Fun with Cigarettes, and the composers for this show... R/were. Is that show over? I think it's over.
I think it's
Gwendolyn
over.
Sanford and Brandon J. So here we go. So like not obviously not the same thing, but like the beat is almost similar. And the little the way that it sounds both rhythmically driven, but also sparse at the same time. Like you can imagine dialogue happening on top of it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like it feels like the instrument stuff that's happening is like filling in little dee 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 dee, like little fills and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And like there's like that slide guitar type of sound as well.
Like that, like not knowing what context that was used in, that almost felt to me like somebody was like doing something a little shady or a little sneaky.
Totally. Yeah.
Whereas this Sabacc game music to me sounds like it kind of sounds like if you took the images away, maybe like this guy is trying to call this girl and it's not quite going the way. There's like some sort of mix up. Maybe he called the wrong number and he's thinking he's talking to that girl, but he's talking to a different girl. There's like, I don't know. That's where my brain is going when I hear this music.
Like there's an underlying up in the airness of what is happening. Almost like an uncertainty.
Kind of, but in like a... you know,
comedic way,
in a wacky way, yeah,
right, in like a wacky way, yeah. Totally. Yeah, I think that's in a wacky way. Okay, let's listen to some of that just without the dialogue and stuff. So I'm listening to Sabacc Game. Okay, to me it sounds like they're looking for something. Someone's looking for something. Turning around one corner, is it here?
You think of where did I leave that?
Let's turn around the other place. Yeah, where did I leave something?
Where's that phone number that she gave me?
Oh, that was a close call. Okay. Now the stakes are raised. I mean, in a way, it like... Oh, now I'm remembering this other thing. Little hints of this and that. I mean, it fits for a game of Sabacc.
Yeah. It works. Like, it doesn't bother me. It's just because like, I think maybe I said this before when I did the show, like a lot of times for me, I don't necessarily like really zone in on the music if it's like a score situation. And if, as long as it doesn't, how do I say this right? I'm kind of glad that I don't get too like wrapped up in it, because for me, I feel like, okay, if I'm not getting distracted by it, then in a way it's doing its job. Like, it should just sort of be there, like, supplementing the scene. So, like, it wasn't distracting to me, but if I do focus in on it, I'm like, oh, this, I don't know, it feels maybe a little out of place, but not enough to have taken me out of it.
Do you remember your experience of watching this film for the first time?
I do. I don't really remember having a lot of music thoughts, though, initially. Like, again, it just was kind of there for me. Mm-hmm. And literally, like, the main times I remember noticing the music were things when it had, like, cues from John Williams stuff.
For sure.
Yeah. Like, I feel like the main thing I really remember is, if I remember right, it's been a minute since I've watched the whole thing. But when we see a Star Destroyer, I think, and you hear the, like, bum, bum, bum.
Yeah, the Death Star.
Yeah,
uh-huh.
Yeah. That was like the biggest, like, oh, they used a little bit of that in there. But other than that, it was just kind of like, yeah, music's there and it's not distracting me. So it's all right.
Do you remember if you were more or do you, what about Rogue One? I'm curious, since that's the other like non-John Williams.
Yeah, kind of the same thing. I do remember the biggest thing I feel like I remember from that is just the music at the beginning when the title comes up, when it says Rogue One. I feel like it both fits, but also I don't know, it felt a little generic or something. Like, I couldn't hum what that music is to you.
Do, 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 do. But okay. I know that was,
yeah, that like, but that like rung a bell as you did it, but still I wasn't like immediately like, oh yeah, that, like, it's just kind of, yeah, it doesn't, it's not grabbing me.
I think that's so funny. I mean, it's not funny. It's just, I had the same experience. Solo didn't, uh-huh. The music didn't really distract me. Mm-hmm. Rogue One, the music really distracted me.
I know, because Rogue One was Giacchino, right?
Yes.
And then who did Solo? I forget.
John Powell.
Okay, right. Okay.
But John Williams wrote the Han Solo themes.
That's right. I forgot about that. Yes, I think you brought that up on Star Wars Minute, right?
Probably.
I feel like I found this out from you, but not directly.
I've heard that. No. Yeah. yeah. So this is. So I actually, even though I know we talked about this when we discussed The Last Jedi, but I think it still rings true for me that in that, like, I don't think I get super distracted by the score. Like, I don't think I hyper focus on the score when I'm really drawn into the movie. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not something I'm not, see, this changes like the more I talk about stuff. Now I notice more, but
right. Of course.
But still, like, I the score just feels really wrapped up in my experience of movies as a whole. So while I definitely don't, I can't say that I have a memory of this scene sticking out to me in terms of the music and being like, I don't like this, it's annoying me or something like that. While I don't, right. I don't think that happened. I do think the music being like this, like how it is, did just influence how I interpreted the whole scene. And it just like colored my whole experience of the movie, the scene in the movie. So it's, mm-hmm. you know, it can just become, it can be neutral. It can be a neutral thing, but it does fundamentally change like how I take a movie or a show. It's like mm-hmm. kind of a similar thing. Like, I don't know if you watched The Book of Boba Fett, mm-hmm. but
of course.
But whenever I talk to people about the Majordomo, who is a character that, I don't know, there was like so much about the show that I didn't, frankly, like, I didn't enjoy.
It was a weird show.
And some of the scenes were like I couldn't take seriously because the music I felt was not serious, which is fine. It just, to me, it just, it, to me, the, that show mostly came off as a, I don't know, like a fun, like little kids move, like a fun kids show, like, which is fine. But like, then when it's broaching serious things and then trying, and then asking like me as an audience member to take it seriously, when we've had this like plunk, 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 like silly music to underscore certain things, like it just was hard for me to understand the tone and like really hard for me to catch on to what mood and how seriously to take, you know, certain things that on screen look brutal in, but musically sound funny, like that type of thing. So that's more of that's, and again, like when I listen to the Book of Boba Fett soundtrack without looking at the movie, like I don't have a, like, no problem. It's for me, it's like all about how it's paired. That is,
yeah, that was a, I didn't not like that show, but that was definitely, I had a lot of moments I really enjoyed, but overall, yeah, there was a lot of just like, I don't really know why this is existing. Like, what's kind of the point of what's happening here? Again, some fun stuff that I really, really liked in there, but a lot of like, yeah, what is this? Why is this happening?
Yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong. Like, I enjoyed watching it every week. I enjoyed it.
Oh, same.
I enjoyed it, but just the things that I am critical about it are, you know,
I am the
enjoyed it, but
way.
Critical. Yeah.
Yeah. All those shows, I will watch them at midnight the second they come out, and then usually watch them again first thing in the morning the next day. So, yeah, I still get into it, even if it bugs me at times.
Yeah. They suckered us in, Tony.
I know. There's no way out.
There's no way
out. Okay with that.
Yeah. Well, there is no way out of this lodge. That was a very Star Wars minute-like transition, wasn't it? That's like something Peter Alex would say. Well, there's no way out in this lodge we are in. No, I'm just kidding. There kind of is, but also kind of not, because they're kind of trapped by the transportation difficulties that they're all having in terms of needing ships and having certain things impounded, apparently. It's a little bit confusing, to be honest, what the situation is, because I don't think going into this scene, we know that Lando's ship is locked up. The practicalities of what is actually happening are a little bit lost on me as I watch this movie. It's just the broad strokes that I'm getting, like, okay, they're going to bet on something.
Right.
And Lando will need to join them.
I'm kind of with you there. I feel like you and I are on the same page with everything thus far today.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You better not. No, I'm just kidding. You better not cross me later. No, I'm just kidding.
We'll see what happens. It's early.
Yeah. So we hear, okay, so we have this baseline of this music, which is kind of like a, you know, what we've been talking about. It has the steady tempo. It has a lot of open space for dialogue and for like crowd reactions like, oh, stuff like that. And there's lots of space for little interludes. I don't know, like little flourishes of other themes to drop in and out, to decorate the tune, I guess. And we'll hear some of those. So let's take a listen again. And we'll point stuff out.
All right.
Sorry, guys. Close, but not quite.
It's a little rebel fanfare, kind of.
Eyes on your own cards, buddy.
So now this is an alien with six eyes.
There. Well, now I see yours.
Which we'll talk about, because I love him.
Yeah.
And now here, that's Emphis Nest theme. Dee-dee-dee-dee-dee. Because we're seeing a couple cloud riders spying on them. It's subtle, like it just drops in and out. This anteater alien.
Didn't even notice.
Fave.
All right, how about this? I'll see you a bit, and I'll raise you. 2,000.
and the music kind of stalls there because it's sort of like a big moment.
Yeah, yeah.
Did you know you noticed that too, right?
Kind of? Sure.
Okay. Here.
I mean, if I'm being honest, no, not really. Right. See,
it's kind of reminds me of when Han says, "What about unrefined coaxium?" And then it's like, pause.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely know. Once you point it out, I definitely notice it. But it's one of those things that it's like subtle enough that I just sort of like am watching, and those little things sometimes I don't even pick up unless I'm really focusing on the music.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And certainly on like a first pass, without knowing when everything's unfolding in real time at the same time, it's hard to. I'm positive that I didn't really notice that either.
What is the difference between, you mentioned there's the deluxe soundtrack. What's different about the deluxe soundtrack?
There's a ton more music. First of all, it came out 2 years after the regular soundtrack, and the deluxe soundtrack has, I think, I don't know, 100? I made that number up. A lot of extra music that is in the film that is missing from the original soundtrack.
Okay.
And it also, you know, a couple notable things are it has Chicken in the Pot the way that it's in the film. Mm-hmm. Because in the original
soundtrack. Oh, is it different
on the soundtrack? Yeah, in the original soundtrack, the second voice, you know, the little fish head singing in the tank. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
On the soundtrack, originally, it's a really, really high-pitched voice. Dee, 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 dee. And then in the movie, it's this very low voice.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until the deluxe version of the soundtrack that we got the movie version of Chicken in the Pot.
Weird. Have you heard any stories on why that is? Was that the original plan? Was it initially going to be a high voice or something?
Yeah, it was originally going to be a high voice. And the thing is, like, the very last thing that happens in like movie production is the printmaster for like the music of the movie, which is like how it's going to be in theaters. And it's like after the soundtrack stuff had already been finalized, like there's still time to change the printmaster of like the audio tracks for the movie. And at the kind of last minute, I guess Ron Howard or like the directors were like on stage or whatever, filming, doing last minute like ADR for that scene.
Yeah.
And like seriously at the last minute, they were like, you know, I think it would work better with a low voice. And so John Powell had to go back and like redo it with the low voice. But the soundtrack stuff had already been sent off. It was like the way he describes it in interviews is like he had to go, they did the low voice super last minute. And then next thing you know, it's in theaters. Like, because that's the last thing that they finalize.
Right.
So.
And I'm sure I'm sure he's polite when speaking about it. But deep down, he's probably like, really? We're going to change this?
He has said in interviews that he prefers the high voice one, but he prefers the original high voice one. It's a version that we haven't heard because it's a version that he did kind of, he put the words into like an online translator himself and recorded it with the high voice. And then someone at Lucasfilm was like, we need to get a more sanctioned language. We need to fix the language to make it really accurate. So they had like a specialist come in and fix the language and re-record the high voice version.
Uh-huh.
And then low voice version. So there's three versions.
Yeah, we got a real lopty neck situation going on here.
Do we?
Yeah, there's multiple versions of lopty neck out there.
Oh, seriously?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Because there was they did one like initially, I think, because they wrote it in English. And so I've seen like behind the scenes stuff where they are using the English version like while shooting it, or at least rehearsing it kind of. And, you know, it's been a bit since I've done all the research, but I did like a bonus episode of my podcast.
It's on Bizarre Albums.
Lopty Neck. Yeah. And I have it in because it's normally I do singles for Patreon episodes, but I did release this in the main feed at one point. So there is a Lopty Neck episode, and it's been years since I've done it. So the research hasn't all stuck with my head. With my head, you know what I meant.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's a lot. There's like, yeah, I want to say at least three versions. There might even be a fourth.
Wow.
Yeah, Because I think the one that was released as a single is that situation where it's not quite the same one that you hear in the movie. I think, if I remember right.
Wow. And this is all before, and then it's a moot point by the time Jedi Rocks comes around.
Exactly.
Oh, wow. Okay. I can see why Lopty Neck fans have, okay. Interesting. There's more to this Lopty Neck situation. I'll get into it at some point.
Yeah.
So what were we talking about? I forgot.
Lopty Neck.
Great.
We'll just listen to my episode on Lopty Neck now.
Yeah. The rest of this episode is our reaction to Tony's episode about Lopty Neck.
Yes.
And okay, so we're talking about we talked about Chicken in the Pot. Oh, you asked me about the deluxe soundtrack versus...
Yes, sorry. I once again derailed
it's
you.
It's totally fine. But yeah, the deluxe version is more like accurate to, or it's more complete. And gotcha. The namings are also, you can tell if it's coming from the deluxe soundtrack because the names of the tracks will have the cue number afterward.
Okay.
So it'll be like Sabacc Game 3M25. It'll be like L3 and Millennium Falcon, 3M26.
Yeah.
Stuff like that.
Right.
And a lot of the tracks are the same as the regular version, but with different names, which I think is really interesting.
Yeah, that is weird.
Yeah. And some of them are like the same. There are a few tracks that are called like deluxe something, deluxe train ice, super deluxe end credits, deluxe something. And it's like a combination of a few different tracks. Like where it's split up on the regular soundtrack. I don't know. It's.
Is there any music that is not in the movie at all?
Yes, a little bit. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. Like stuff that was cut.
Yeah. I assumed, but just wondered.
Yeah. As there tends to be.
Yeah.
But it makes it interesting to go through this. It is a little, it is like a more organized situation to go through than, say, A New Hope soundtracks, which trying to line up A New Hope soundtracks when there's so many different cuts of certain cues.
Right.
Is like, at least here, there's only two versions of the soundtrack to compare them to as of now.
When you hear this deluxe version, like when you listen to it the first time, as a person that nerds out on a score much more than I would, do you, when you get to those songs that are not in the movie, do you immediately go like, oh, I don't know this one?
No.
All right, just wondering.
One thing is like, it's hard to hear in movies. It's, and especially in Solo, I feel is a very prime example. It's sometimes even hard to hear what music is being played. So like I will refer back to the soundtrack to even just hear what the music is underneath all the sound, underneath all the sound effects. You're like,
yeah,
sure. So sometimes things are mixed so softly. I mean, sometimes that will happen though, where I'm like, oh, I didn't hear this like detail in the movie, but that's because other stuff was so loud that I just couldn't hear that part. But also I'm not a soundtrack nerd. I don't really listen to soundtracks that much.
Chrysanthi, Xanthi, as you said, we can call you.
What, Tony?
You're doing a show about scores. You can't say you're not a nerd about this stuff. And I don't mean that as an insult. I mean that as a compliment.
I'm saying. A Star Wars nerd.
Own it.
Who is music nerd.
Well, yeah,
who,
me too.
Yeah, I know. But there's a lot of
different ways.
But there's a lot of different, musician to musician, Tony. Okay. There's like so many different angles of interest. There's so many different angles to enter. Like everyone has like a slightly different entry point, like into what they're even super fascinated in, you know?
Right. Of course.
And like you do, okay. You're into bizarre albums.
Yeah. And I'll own it. Unlike you.
And I'm into Star Wars music minute by minute.
Very specific. And by the way, sorry, go ahead. I didn't mean to cut you off.
I'm into how music affects subconsciously and consciously our experience of like other things.
Right.
You know, I'm not like, when I set out to do this podcast, I specifically was like, I have no interest in being a Star Wars music podcast that goes like, all right, today we're opening the score to this cue. And now let's like, without even like looking at the movie, like now, like let's analyze this, what's happening here. I'm going to teach you about this and that. Like, I'm actually not so interested in that. If I did, I might be in academia or something, or I might have gotten a little bit farther in some of my music history classes or whatever, or some of my musicology classes. Maybe I would have gone further in that direction, but I didn't. What I'm interested in is like talking to people about music and being like, you liked that? Why do you think you liked that? Oh, did you know that this thing is like similar to when it happens here? Like I like being like a dot connector. And music is just like a medium that I understand I think pretty well, and like to, you know, like literature analysis, but like with music.
Yeah, no, I like it. And I admire that because I like that kind of thing too, but I feel like, I don't know, in a slightly different way or I'm not intelligent enough to, quite think of these things the way that you're able to.
It's not about intelligence, Tony. I asked the people on my Discord if they had any questions for you prior to this, and there are some questions for you, but one of them I immediately was like, I don't think Tony's gonna push back on this because he's so humble that he's not and you're already doing it. So we were talking about music. I was saying that I'm not a nerd and, So what I was saying was like, I don't notice film scores in the way that, like, I'm not a film score nerd in the sense of I want to listen. Like, I love listening to soundtracks. I don't, mm-hmm. I like listening to soundtracks if I really like the movie. Like, I appreciate an amazing soundtrack if I see it in a movie. And usually, if I think a movie is amazing, the soundtrack also was amazing.
Right. What is your favorite soundtrack? Not even, I mean, maybe it is, I'm assuming probably is a Star Wars soundtrack, but maybe not. Just in general.
In general, it's
I mean, it
hard
can
for
be
me.
Star Wars.
Well, it's hard for me to. It's. I discount Star Wars from most of my favorite. How I conceive of things that are favorites, because I think Star Wars is just in a totally different level. Where it's like, I can't look at it objectively, and I own that. Because Star Wars to me doesn't feel like something I like. It feels like so close to me, you know, since tied to my childhood. It's like family to me. So it is not. You know, I could sit here and defend Star Wars, but like against whom? No one, who cares? Like, I just love it. And so I'm going to talk about it because it's just here and I love it. And it's not always rational, but, okay. So Star Wars aside, my favorite film composer is probably Johnny Greenwood.
Okay.
And so like Phantom Thread, There Will Be Blood. I like that stuff.
All right. Nice. Yeah.
But you know, I also love like E.T. And
right.
And also like the Tron Legacy, Daft Punk.
Okay. Never not really a Tron guy. So I never saw the second one. So I don't know.
Yeah, I don't really remember the movie. I just remember the soundtrack stood out, which is kind of rare. For me. Also I'm a big Air fan, so when Air did Virgin Suicides, into that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
All right. Just wonder. You? Yeah. Curious.
Well, I guess we're going to get to that in the Star Wars music questionnaire.
We can wait if you want. Up to you. You're the host.
Oh my goodness. That's so much power. Okay. Let's wait. So we're starting to get to these alien sounds that are kind of making their way into the scene, and the music, you know, leaves nice room for them. One of them is like Han says, keep your eyes on your own cards. or eyes on your own cards, buddy, all of them. And it's this amazing alien with six eyes.
Mm-hmm.
I found on StarWars.com this Secrets of the Solo a Star Wars Story creature shop. And they show...
Yeah, he's a practical effect.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They show him with six... Okay, he has six eyes, and they're individually controlled. Each eye stalk could also be puppeteered individually to give Argus full ocular advantage during the game, is what they say.
Crazy.
The head itself, we're talking about the alien Argus, six eyes, Panox, by the way. The head itself...
And if you're wondering, who is that? Watch the movie and you'll go, oh, that's who it is. You know, that's all... His nickname is Six Eyes. You'll know who it is.
Yeah. The head itself weighed approximately 8 pounds, contained 50 servo motors, and utilized a special gyroscopic rig designed and programmed by Matt Denton, which allowed the eyes to react to Derek's head movements and return naturally to their resting position. I think it's like creature puppeteers and creature designers have to have such an intimate understanding, and animators for that you know, too, in general, have to have like a good understanding of human and like various animal biomechanics, I think.
Yeah, that's a good point. I never really thought about that. See, again, way smarter than me. I never really thought about that element of it. I, you know, I always get just caught up in the like, wow, that's amazing that that's real and they figured out how to do this or whatever. But I never really thought about the reality like element to it of like what you're saying.
Well, it's like it's easy to take for granted because just reading here, you know, allowing the eyes to react and then return naturally to their resting position. Like that's not something that I would have thought about, but
no,
I can imagine like, I mean, I'm a very amateur artist. So when I'm drawing stuff, which, you know, I love to do visual art, but I am not trained and not by outside standards any good. And anytime I'm trying to do something where there's a bit of like realism to it, or it kind of has to resemble something real, there will be like parts of it that just look so funky where I'm like, I don't know why this doesn't, like, what am I missing? What don't I understand about the way that necks connect to shoulders or something, you know, like why does it? And then it just like dawns on me that like, wow, artists, like visual artists, designers, have to kind of have an eye for that, or like kind of have to understand. I don't know. It's just like all of that hasn't been unlocked for me yet, you know?
Right. I mean, it is hard because I don't do it nearly as much as I used to, but when I was younger, I was very into drawing. Like it was kind of like a thing that I considered going in that direction but then I got older and that kind of faded away and it became just all about music for me. But I was kind of the same way where like, if you wanted me to draw something more like cartoony or something, I could do that all day long. But then when it was more realistic things, even if I had like an exact image that I was supposed to like try and recreate, like there's just certain like parts of the body that are like really hard to capture well, like noses and hands, especially were like, that's what I found super hard was hands.
Oh, that's interesting because, well, wait, hands, the palm or the other side?
Honestly, any of it.
Oh, this is okay. Have you seen? Okay, wait, no. You know how like sometimes, well, I don't know. Sometimes when you're like thinking so fast, you go like, you think of the next connection and then you think of the way that that next connection connects to like the next thing. And then you think about the way that third thing connects to the fourth thing. And then by the time your mouth catches up, you're talking about the fourth thing and you realize it doesn't make any sense unless you go back.
Oh, you and I could not be much more on the same page because okay. I do this shit all the time.
Okay. So I almost brought something up that was like a few too links.
I get too far. Just go there if you need to. I understand.
Okay. So you know that like homunculus, have you seen that? Like
No, I don't think so.
It's like a represent. I'm looking up the name. I've seen this. Okay. There we go. Cortical homunculus is a distorted representation of the human body based on a neurological map of the areas and proportions of the human brain dedicated to processing motor functions or sensory functions. So the point is like, I first came across this in this like book I have about it. It's like violinist, like body stuff, like positioning and kind of body maps. And there's like a whole series for different musicians and like whatever. It kind of showed like how different musicians might have different neurological maps of the importance or the significance of different parts of their body. So like it shows this like really distorted view of your body with like the parts that you are most sensorily aware of as being drawn really, really big. And then like the parts that you have less feeling in like drawn really, really small. So like a violinist or something might have like their hands in this distorted like anatomical view, their hands would be like huge or something, or like a singer or a trumpet player would be like, you know, maybe their lips will be really, really, really big. Maybe like there something else will be smaller or whatever, but like basically the whole thing looks just look it up. People look it up. Homunculus, you'll see like tons of different representations. Oh, and just in general, humans, you know, regardless of instrument or whatever. I don't want to put images here just in case of copyright, but like I'm looking at images now, and like it shows humans tend to have like really big, like their tongue will be drawn really, really big because we have a lot of like sense in our tongues. I mean, a lot of us, not all of us, obviously. But like fingers will often be really, really big and stuff like that. So the reason I thought of that was because we were talking about the level. Oh yeah, we were talking about art, and you were saying that you had trouble drawing hands. And for me, like hands have always been a part of the body that I've been fascinated with drawing. So when I am drawing, the hands will have like often have way more detail than other things. And in general, like as an untrained artist who just is going off of what is most relatable to me or what I most know just naturally, like it's interesting looking at some artwork where it's like some parts are really vague looking and some parts are more detailed, you know, like if I'm drawing instruments, like I'm going to draw. It's almost funny that like I tried to draw like I was trying to draw instruments the other day and kind of in a simple style, like, you know, like thinking of like merch or something. And I like drawing other instruments in a way that looks simple, like much easier than drawing a violin simply. Cause in the violin, I'm like, oh, I'm putting like all this detail. I'm like, oh, make sure to get the F holes, make sure to get the four strings, make sure to put the fingerboard in there, make sure to put the chin rest in there. And then I'm like, this doesn't match like the other, it doesn't match the other instruments. And it looks weirdly detailed. And I almost don't know how to strip away like what is essential, because it all looks essential.
You're too familiar with it in a way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I guess in all kinds of art, like including music, like the parts that we are most comfortable with or have the most prior thought about, we might fill in with more detail and just be able to realize those ideas more fully, whereas other parts might be a little bit more of a structure or just like a placeholder or something.
I hear you. I don't know what to add to that other than I hear you.
I think that's why, like, sometimes independent films or TV episodes or something about that are directed or led by people who have a really specific vision, and they might not have like, they might not be interested enough to do like a full scope of a full story, but just really hone in on the part that they are, have the detailed mindset in or whatever the detailed view of, sometimes can come across as like super rich and vivid. And then sometimes like watching a film, like parts of it feel like really fully realized and some parts feel like I mean, I'm kind of repeating myself, but some parts feel more like going through the motions, like getting to the next thing. Like if I were doing a film, that would be me with any sort of a chase sequence. I'd be like, okay, I guess let's do this chase thing. And right, then let's get right to the really meaty character, like really meaty character, like dialogue scene. And then I'll like get really into that. And that will be a better right scene for sure than
yeah
my chase scene.
Yeah, I get that. I get that for sure. Yeah. I think I would be, yeah, once again, I'd be a similar boat.
Well, when we were, when, I won't say it was viral, but like when all of the hullabaloo was going on around, I'm making this up, there was no singular time that there was hullabaloo, but there was just time that Tony and I were texting about the iPhone ringtone.
Oh, yes, yes.
Rhythm or something.
Uh-huh.
And I'm talking about the whatever. And
yep, that was right.
There was like, we were kind of debating or just like sharing where we thought the beats, like how the meter of that shake out basically. Mm-hmm. And I believe we did not have the same concept of where the beat was.
No.
But like, you're a drummer, and the way that you conceived of it, I felt was so wild. I was like,
I felt the same way about yours because I was like, I don't know how that's how she's hearing.
I mean, so I thought, I think that was definitely an interesting case study where it's like this thing that a lot of us have heard thousands of times. This ringtone, and we're conceiving of it being like having the beats in different places, having it start at a different place. And as someone who doesn't play an intrinsically like rhythmic instrument, I can be very fuzzy about like, it's hard for me to like lock in quickly to what I think a rhythm is, and it's my biggest stumbling block when transcribing music by hand, actually, because like I will often listen to music and then, you know, write it out like on staff paper, and the notes come like way easier to me than the hardest thing for me is just deciding on the meter. Cause I'll be like, I'll write some notes and I'm like 3/4. And then I'm like, oh, but should that be a fermata? Or is that like, does it actually switch from 3/4 to like 5/4? Right. Like the counting trips me up and then I have to keep starting over because I'm like, oh, I lost the count. I lost the count. And so that part is, yeah, it's hard for me.
For me, it's like, it's all about just feeling it for me. Like it's pretty rare that I actually count. Like unless I'm like really trying to break something down that's confusing me, I might like try to figure it out. But usually it more just becomes like about feel and even just sort of like memorizing what's happening. And I will say, I was talking about this with somebody the other day. I don't remember how this came up, but like there have been a few like gigs I've gotten hired for where I learned a song or whatever, and like maybe the song starts on, let's say it like starts on like the and of two. There's like a little like kind of like fill, and then the song really starts. And sometimes when it's like even the person who like wrote the song, sometimes like they try to count it off. And they'll still be like 1, 2, 3, 4. And then they start it on. I'm like, no, that's not what's happening. Like, what, why are you doing? Like,
oh my God,
like,
that bothers
it should
me.
Be 1, 2, da, 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 you know? And yeah, that's when I can never let that one go. Even if I,
as you shouldn't.
Like, I know I'm just being hired here to like do the thing, but like, that's not how we count this song off. If you try to count it off and do it that way, it's not going to work for me.
Oh my gosh. That's how I feel when I'm doing like dance choreography, and like some choreographers will like do counts, and some choreographers will choreograph to like the lyrics, but then also sometimes count, but like the counts change every time. And as someone who I'm not always going to know the song that the choreographer is teaching a dance to. So it doesn't help me to know that like a move is on when they say why or something. I'm like, just give me the count. But it so often doesn't match. And then similar thing. But the feel thing is like, it's a drummer, like, It's something that I desperately, like, I so want to be that way. Like, I can get there. But often I'll have to, like, brute force it by counting it in some, like, ridiculous way first and until I feel it. For example, like, in my guitar violin duo, like, we used to play a lot of Balkan music. And so, like, that would be, like, something written in 13 or things, you know, like that. And for me, I would have to, like, write in my music, like, you know, triangle, triangle, square, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, or, you know, or what is it? Triangle, 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 square for, like, you know, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 4, just so I could, like, stay in time and not count all the way up to 13 because I can't count all, I can't go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, three, one, two, three, four, one, two, until I feel it. And of course, it doesn't, it never sounds smooth until I just am so used to that 13 meter that like I can just feel it without being like one, two, three, one, two, three, one, two, three, like robotic.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Yeah. The less I have to think about what I'm doing, the better I'm going to play.
Yes. And what you described,
sort of zone out.
Yes. What you described with rhythms is how I am with keys, basically. Whereas like, I don't often think about what, I don't really think about like what key I'm in or like even necessarily what notes I'm playing. I just feel it like when I'm either listening to something and trying to match it or just trying or jumping into like a band and just jumping into coming up with a violin part to just do something with the band. Like just eventually, like, it, you know, it's like almost, it's so fast. I can't even really describe it. It's just like, even if the first thing I play sounds wrong, it like, I, it just, the correction is just like, it, you can just, I can just like instantly get on, get on board and I don't think about it. So then when it comes time to being like, oh, is that where it goes to A flat? I'm like, I do. I understand notes and stuff, but like I haven't really thought about it. So maybe.
Yeah. Right. I'm the same way. Yeah. When people, I've had people like ask me about like certain drum parts that I've written or something. And then if I like try to break it down, I have the hardest time, even though I'm the person that came up with it. And I'm like, I just do it. I don't know. When you ask me to like break it down, I like really need to like take some time to do that because I can't. It just sort of happens for me.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's such a. I think that is, and this harkens back to our last conversation too. But like, I feel like this is probably a common place that we in our conversations probably land a ton is just so many things as players of music are like natural isms to how we just express ourselves that are not necessarily like, oh, I studied how to do this. Now I'm going to do this, which can make it really, which can make it like alienating or it can feel really weird to step outside and then try to analyze music from an outsider's perspective because we know from the, from being on the inside and coming up with things that it's not necessarily as top down, as analyzable, as intentional as someone might, you know, try to categorize it on from the theoretical perspective, which is, you know,
right.
Which is why it's like weird for me to think it's sometimes it's helpful for me to talk to music theorists and such who I like to, in my mind, they're hearing stuff and categorizing it in a certain way that to me, I'm like, that's a natural violin gesture, but interesting that you're seeing it that way. That's not really what I think about when I do that, but I can definitely see how there is a pattern. I don't notice it when I'm in my bubble that this is happening necessarily, but, yeah, I don't know. Yeah. I don't know what I'm saying there, but you know, making music and then trying to analyze the music that is being made can sometimes, I don't know, they can, not everything really lines up one-to-one.
Yeah. I think some people can do that, but I am definitely not one of those people.
I think some people can if they're writing in a certain, if they're writing in a certain style, but I don't know. I think I would find, I can't really think of any composers I know, at least, or any musicians I know who can explain like the nuances of every single gesture or riff or style, like slide or ornament that right. they're using. Mm-hmm. And even if we go back to dance, like I grew up dancing, and oftentimes even choreographers, sometimes like there's if there's any dancers listening to this, you know that moment when like a choreographer is teaching you something and they're teaching it to you slowly and breaking down their movements and they're being specific. They're like, you know, your hand this, then you do blades here, you know, with your hands, and then you break here, and then you like whatever, do this. And then when you actually see them demonstrate their dance, they're not doing it exactly in that like broken down way that they taught you. Like they don't even notice that they are kind of doing certain things slightly different.
Yeah. That immediately made me think of, I had stumbled into a video on YouTube of Ringo trying to, he was showing the drum part to come together.
Oh.
And he does it wrong.
Oh, no way.
When he's doing his little like breakdown of it and showing what he does, it's not what he does. And I know like anyone hearing this is probably like, he wrote it.
The beginning?
He would know. Yeah, the doom 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 just that thing.
And how does he teach it?
He like does it backwards. Like he, instead of, actually there is like a slight, I'll simplify this. This isn't totally correct, but more or less he just goes down the time. You know, it's like but he's like, he's going up instead of down.
Oh.
And even if you listen to the recording, there is actually one other hit that kind of comes out of order, but like it's not what he's doing at all when he's trying to explain it. And I'm like, it's so strange. I mean, you know, he's also like 80 years old at this point, so maybe that's part of it. I don't know. But
also artists do this thing, like we all do this thing where like sometimes we intended to do something, recorded it wrong.
Yeah.
And then when we try to teach it, we think that like we should teach the correct version, but like everyone loves the wrong version, which is like we kind of project our own it's like George Lucas remaking his own movies so many times. Yeah. Anyway. Interesting. Okay, so that was our first alien. And then we have this this chomper, and this chomper is probably my favorite. So we have to listen to this chomper. Here we go.
Two.
There we go. I looked up alienanthology.wordpress.com. There's Alien Compendium Solo, and I'll tell you what that is. First of all, I love that sound. It's like, I thought it was sort of like anteater-like, but here, the Crocin from Croci were a reptilian species with teeth protruding from the top of their mouth. They wore an oiled head wrap to keep their scales from drying out. Carge, a Crocin gambler, can be seen in the lodge. He's a sore loser, rather eating his cards than showing them. So apparently that's the sound of him eating his cards. Although to me, I thought it was him biting his nails.
Oh, okay.
Which
I think I thought he was eating his cards, or even like partially his hands or something too.
Okay. His hands regenerate every time he's nervous and needs to bite
like
them.
Like a lizard tail.
But that's just such I don't know why I like that one so much. okay, so we still haven't gotten to your person. Oh wait, how? I don't know. And then we are, let's continue.
Horrible. I'm serious.
Oh no, we forgot this line that I like.
Whoa, 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 hand.
Here we go.
Slow down.
Slow down.
Mind what quit while you're ahead?
You might want to quit while you're behind.
I like this kid.
You're adorable.
And I'm serious.
And I'm calling.
With what? Your scarf? Not my style.
Okay, so before I jump in, do you have any thoughts?
On the music specifically or just in general?
Anything? Related to what we just heard?
Yeah, nothing really on the music. I don't know why. I feel like the line of when he tells Han he's adorable, it feels, I don't know, it doesn't feel like the correct line there. Like it feels weird. It doesn't feel like a Lando line to me. I know what they're going for, but I feel like it was not quite right.
Oh, interesting. Lando's older than Han, right?
That's a good question.
I kind of took it that, like, because when he's like, the adults are talking or the grown-ups are talking.
Right.
I kind of took it that he's like maybe slightly older than Han, like maybe like 2 years, you know, like.
Right. Yeah, I didn't really like put that much literal thought into it because I just sort of took it as like he just thinks he's like above him kind of.
Well, yeah, there's definitely that too.
Yeah.
In the novelization, this scene is like slightly, there are a few things that are not mentioned in this, but, I do notice one thing is that he's not the first person to say like, I like this kid basically, because Dryden said that as well. You know, Han is kind of treated definitely like a kid by everyone really. And, the way that he says Han is deliberate because of the way that Han says Sabacc earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And let's see. I'm trying to see how exact this is. He already said what he flies. Okay, well played. Okay. Let's see. His goal was simply to outlast the others at the table. Lando didn't strike him as a quitter, and he was clearly in it for the fun, but he didn't lose very often, which made sense, as winning was fun. Han leaned back to relax, mimicking the same mien of pleased disinterest that Lando had. So he's mimicking the body language of Lando. Once Han had dangled something as nice as a ship in front of Lando, the game had heated up. They rolled, gave up hands, and drew with more and more intensity. The stakes grew higher and higher until everyone had dropped out except Han and Lando. The pot consisted of everything Han owned, that Kira had loaned him, and everything that had been in front of Lando mingled with it. Conversation had stopped. The only sound in the room were various breathing apparatuses. All eyes were on the game, waiting to see what would happen with the final hand. Lando had watched Han as much as he had looked at his cards. He never lost his smile. Finally, he said, "You're bluffing. I'm going to call." Han gestured, and so this is what we just listened to. Han gestured to the empty space in front of Lando. "With what? Your scarf isn't my style." And the whoa, 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 Han, the whoa, whoa, whoa comes later in the novelization, so it's a little bit out of order. But when he mentions the scarf, I don't know if it's intentional or not, but I hear like a harp flourish.
You're adorable.
And I'm serious.
And I'm calling.
With what? Your scarf? Not my style.
My ship.
Oh, wait, I didn't really hear it. But it's definitely there. Okay, wait.
Scarf.
Yeah, I heard it. It's slight.
My ship. You're adorable.
And I'm serious.
And I'm calling.
With what? Your scarf?
There we go.
Not my style.
Indeed.
My ship.
Yeah, it starts like slightly before he even says it.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like right. Yeah. So it's interesting. It's very like scored to the line almost there, unless it's, you know, if it's intentional at least, but it's kind of a nice flourish. And the breathing apparatuses are what we are supposedly hearing. It's an interesting way to say that.
Against your ship. Time to find out if you've got the nerve.
This sounds like a hint of the Rebel fanfare again.
Yeah.
Straight stage.
And again, one of those pauses. Mm-hmm. Another one of those pauses for Han to do a line or like a thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And You played me. Now a more majestic rebel fanfare. Yeah.
You're very good.
But not good enough. Pull the buck.
And then it dissolves.
Yeah.
What do you think of the...
kind? Go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, no. Say what you were going to say, and then I'll ask the question.
Oh, no. It was going to be like jumping ahead a little bit anyway. So go ahead.
Oh, okay. What do you think of the rebel fanfare being used like this?
I like that because, as you said, like it doesn't feel like it's exact, but it's like, yeah, as you kind of said, like a hint of it, kind of. I sort of like that. I like just like the little nods here and there. I like that.
Yeah, you're right. It's not like dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee- Yeah, that's true. What were you going to say about jumping ahead?
Oh, I was just going to say, this is pretty much it for music for these minutes then, right?
Yeah.
Because I was going to ask you, is this the least amount of music in a week you've ever had on here?
No, there were definitely in A New Hope, there was a lot of silence.
Okay.
But still, 3 minutes. I think we have 3 minutes then.
Yeah.
Of silent, not silent. It's definitely not silent, but not.
Yeah. No mute. Yeah. No music.
Yeah. Because then we get into the droid fighting pit, and there's a lot of crowd noise, and I'll jump forward a little bit, this. So it's the dialogue.
We're more like partners.
The crowd is definitely.
Excuse me. Mm-hmm.
The thing we're supposed to hear.
Last I checked, me and Crimson Dawn were squared away. Mm-hmm. Dryden said, "All was forgiven after I did the whole Felucia thing for him."
Yeah. Which I feel like it's pretty common, or I feel like it makes sense for the music to die down when there's a scene with heavy dialogue to pay attention to.
Yeah, it just, I guess, again, when I'm focusing in on it more, I was surprised at how little music was in this section.
Yeah, it's true. So after Lando beats Han, because he cheats, did you pick up on that he was cheating?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Why did you not?
I can't remember if I did the first time. I didn't super pick up on it until I read the novelization.
Okay.
And now I pick up on it, but it wasn't until I heard it, until I heard it and saw it described that I connected that to what was going on screen. Cause I could see on screen, that he has something up his sleeve, but it didn't register to me what that was.
Okay. Because I was gonna ask. I was not even with the later, the end scene when it goes not as planned for him.
Yeah, I mean,
with that.
Maybe I did, but also maybe I was just I probably see, this is the part of my homunculus brain where I'm scenes where there's talk about betting and I don't know, I would be I would just be terrible at playing any sort of a betting game where I had to kind of do this, I don't know, emotional, psychological, I don't have patience for that type of thing. And these types of scenes to me just go completely over my head. I'm just kind of want them to get over with, and don't really care to see people bluffing and having the card or not having the card or whatever. It kind of washes over me. So I'm pretty sure I noticed that he was maybe missing a cheating thing at the end, but it again, I think maybe also because I just know how it ends, Han's gonna win. I know Han's gonna win, get the Falcon. Right. I know he's not gonna win at first. I don't think I was even invested in paying attention because I was just I know how this wins and it's gonna be some combination of factors, whatever, but Han's winning. So that's all. I'll just wait till he wins.
Right. I do think I was, I just assumed during this part, I think the first time I saw it, that this is where Han wins. You know, I didn't know it was going to be another game later. But yeah.
Yeah, probably.
To the best of my memory.
I probably thought that too. I won't give myself that much credit. But when he lost, I definitely knew that at the end of the movie, he was going to win.
Right.
That's for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it wasn't until the novelization when it describes, like, goes into detail about the way that Lando cheats and everything that I was like, oh. And now when I see the movie, I'm like, oh yeah, I know what's happening here.
Right.
Couple years late. It's fine. Well, now that the music's pretty much done, tell me about Therm's scissor punch.
I mean, really, all it is for me is I just enjoy the ridiculousness that is
the way
Therm's
he looks.
Scissor punch of just, yeah, I mean, he looks ridiculous, but it's more the name really for me. I love ridiculous names. I have like a weird affection for ridiculous names to the point that I have like a couple of friends that like
named Therm's scissor punch.
Yes. When any of us see a name that we find ridiculous, we will text it to each other. And I'm pretty sure, like, when I first found out about Therm's scissor punch, I immediately was sending that to friends. It's just such a ridiculous name. And it ended up being, because, you know, that came out before the movie, like they had a reveal of this character and what his name was. And I believe we discovered that was from the Denny's trading cards that existed. And it was, I remember thinking, because, like, you know, the internet, of course, overreacts to everything. And I remember people like immediately like thinking it was way too stupid or whatever. And I'm like, relax, this is gonna be a character you see in the background. They're not gonna call him by name on screen. It's just like, this is just like a silly name they gave him, and you're never gonna hear it said out loud or anything, so like, it's good. We're good here.
So you knew that, yeah. He wasn't gonna be a main part of the crew.
Yeah, exactly. And I also feel like, while he's ridiculous looking, because it really is kind of just the giant lobster, yes. But in a way, it's almost like it's kind of a nod to, I mean, this whole scene really a nod to the cantina, but like, it makes me think, like, I'll test your Star Wars nerddom here. Do you know?
Not a nerd. I'm just kidding.
It made me think of Katik Kidkak.
Oh God. I don't know who that is.
That is the huge praying mantis that is in the cantina that you can see in the background.
Okay, I can see how it's a nod. Yeah, because lobsters are... Yeah, there's a fine line between crustaceans and... What are insects? Anthropods? No, not anthropods.
Sure, we'll go with that. I don't know.
Okay. I shouldn't have just whipped that out. But... Yeah.
But it was just the fact that it was like a large version of a like animal that exists already. It's just weird and a weird move. Like, I feel like I was always fascinated by the praying mantis because it took me probably close to 20 years before I ever even noticed him. And once I did, it's all I see now when I watch that scene.
Oh my gosh. As soon as you mention it, like, now I can see it in my head, and it's, there's something about like, there's just something about the way that their appendages are. It just makes it so funny when it's big.
Yeah, it's a ridiculous thing, because I feel like, you know, obviously that was the first Star Wars movie. So like, you know, they're still sort of figuring it all out. And there's, you know, there's a lot of ridiculous cantina creatures that if you see, you know, if they got more of a close up, especially well lit or something, you're gonna be like, oh, that's a really ridiculous kind of stupid looking creature. And I just like that they were like, yeah, let's just put this giant praying mantis in here. And there's like a giant rat in there too. And like, I don't know. It's a weird thing that I feel like every now and then they'll still do that. Because like, they even had the big ant that was in Mandalorian, which I didn't like that one because...
The big ant, or do you mean like the ant droids in the Book of Boba Fett, Mandalorian?
No, I mean there it was the like an actual ant. Also in the cantina when he goes, because I think Amy Sedaris's character is like playing a card game with him or something.
Oh, okay.
The big ant character, and I didn't like that one as much, only because I felt like they called too much attention to him.
Mm-hmm. Whereas like, Therm is like, just enough attention.
Yeah, yeah, he's just kind of there.
Yeah.
No one was really interacting directly with him.
Now, he is in a very regal looking outfit. On Wikipedia, it says a name he likely gave himself, Therm Scissor Punch, was a male Nephron from the planet Nepetus. He frequented the card tables on the planet Vandor as a particularly sore loser. They're all sore losers, I guess. He relied on his fearsome appearance to intimidate his opponents. He had enhanced his fighting prowess with a sharpened shank implanted in his claw. In 10 BBY, Scissor Punch sat at a gambling table next to the famous smuggler Lando Calrissian.
There you go.
So this, I'm sure it's unrelated, but it is unrelated, but I think it's later on Dryden's like, Colo Clawfish, anyone? And I immediately think, like, are they going to serve up Therm Scissor Punch on a platter? Is that a claw? Is that what the clawfish is? But
I hope that's a callback at some point.
Yeah.
We get to, what did you say the species was called?
Nephron.
Nephron. Didn't know that. And I didn't know that it was supposedly a name he gave himself, too. That almost makes me like it even more.
Well, it's, you name yourself like, it's like naming yourself the Rat Pack or something. It's like, right. Therm Scissor Punch. Yeah. I don't know any more of his species, though. Is he on the Halcyon? No, never mind. I'm thinking of something else. Okay, so back to the minutes. I'm going to ask you some questions. Or actually, I have to ask you, what's your favorite cantina? Or between this lodge, the place at the end of the movie, the Mos Eisley Cantina, Canto Bight, Casino, any of the other, like, do you have any favorites?
Just from any of the movies?
Yeah.
I mean, if we'll...
You can count Madame Garza's, too.
I mean, are we accepting Jabba's Palace?
Yeah.
Because that's, like, landslide for me. While I also love the original cantina, like, Jabba's Palace is, like... literally probably my favorite of, like, just for some reason of all the movies, that's always the part that I don't know, I just have, like, Return of the Jedi is also the one of the original movies that I actually remember seeing in the theater when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, I've just always loved Jabba's Palace and still have strong affection for that whole series of events,
like everything and, like, basically the whole beginning of Return of the Jedi.
Yeah, like, I mean, I love Return of the Jedi. I know it's the one that, of the originals that people will get down on sometimes, but that's, yeah, and that one has a special place for me. And, yeah, the whole Jabba's Palace sequence, I love all the ridiculous aliens and just the, there's something about just Jabba as a whole. I think it's just, like, such an impressive thing anyway that they pulled that off. And when I watch it, I don't know if this is ridiculous, but I'm curious if you have this experience. When I watch that scene and Jabba is there, obviously I know he's not real. I know it's a giant puppet. There's multiple guys inside. But, like, and often when I watch other movies, like when there's an alien or something, like, I'm, like, distracted by, like, that's, like, clearly a person in makeup and I can see how they're doing this. But for some reason, when I watch this and I see Jabba, I, like, buy it the whole time, even though I know it's not a real thing, but I can, like, watch that and it's just like, oh, this is this gangster weird slug thing that they're dealing with. And it's, like, not, I just, like, buy the illusion the entire time. Like, it feels real to me, even though I know it's not.
I'm actually 100% with you on that. And as a kid, Jabba was, like, one of my favorites. I loved Jabba.
Nice.
And I think, I don't know, like, I don't know why it has that, why Jabba has that effect on me, but who knows? I buy Jabba the whole time. I can't see the, like, cracks. I can't, like, see the, I'm totally immersed. And I don't know if it's because it's a design that is, like, the design doesn't exceed the capability of, I don't know. It just feels like it's not so intricate. I don't know. He's not so intricate and maybe ambitious or humanoid like, or like other things that we have a lot of detailed knowledge of, that it's easier to pass. I don't know, but I feel the same way with Jabba.
Yeah, that's a good point about the not humanoid thing. That might actually be what makes it a lot more easier to just buy into it.
Because even though I can't design humanoid creatures or animal-like creatures, I can still like tell when something is off, but I just can't describe how I know that something is off. I just know something is off, and I don't know how to fix it.
Right.
And so it's, but with Jabba, I'm like, yeah, sure.
Yeah. I think the lighting is key also, because I've seen, and maybe it was unfinished in some of these photos I've seen, but I've seen like behind the scenes thing where they show them with it, and it, when it's like in a brightly lit room or something, and it doesn't, again, maybe it wasn't done at that point, but it doesn't look nearly as good. But when it's, you know, a lot darker, I think it's the key to so many of these like aliens and stuff, because there's other movies where maybe they had things lit a little too brightly, and I feel like it
Technicolor.
Brings out the, it brings out the corniness, or how bad some of the
it brings out the corniness. That's, look. Yeah, that's for sure. One other thing that I just thought of this. Like, do you have any? Is there something to the fact that there are so many musicians in Jabba's palace? Are you a fan of like the musicians there?
Well, first of all, in my heart, there are three musicians there.
Okay.
So I don't acknowledge those other ones. But I do. I am in general, and this is a thing I think I always knew, but I only like recently had this actual realization of like, oh yeah, I am a sucker for anytime there's like a band in a thing that I already like or something, and they have some sort of like band element to it or something. I was like that as a kid, and it's like still so, like, yeah, so a lot of like I have some toys and things, and like, so I have some Max Rebo band things, I have some Figuring Dan things, I have like, and then like I love the Muppets too, so I have I'm all like all about the Electric Mayhem and all that stuff. So yeah, I definitely will be drawn into that stuff.
Yeah, I am too, and I think we already talked about this, but I know in Star Wars Visions, I think was it you? We were both really kind of surprised that we loved the Tatooine Rhapsody episode so much. Like, it's so cheesy. It like in a way, like, I don't know. I would think that maybe I would think it was cheesy, but yeah, I don't know, man.
I know. I'm with you. I do think in that case, even though I much prefer in general with my Star Wars, I prefer live action, but that was the perfect medium for that exact thing. Because if that had been a live action thing, I think it would have been.
Oh,
really,
yeah,
cheesier.
For sure. But like the style that it was in, and this like punk pop, like, I don't know, just so earnest. It's just so earnest. Like, I just fell in love with it.
Yeah, it was by far my favorite episode of that. Yeah,
it was. Yeah, it may have been my favorite as well. So one thing that this is making me realize is that the function of these like cantina spaces, these like watering holes, is that a term that people say?
Yeah.
These like seedy places where betting take place and people are drinking and making deals and whatever, they tend to be accompanied by diegetic music or like some sort of a band, like the cantina, even Canto Bight Casino, like Jabba's Palace, even in Book of Boba Fett, Madame Garza's like sanctuary has, you know, Max Rebo or whatever. But here, maybe one thing that is like making this scene seem less, it seems, I don't want to say less serious, but it makes me feel more like, okay, let's just get through this rather than like, I am here and I'm present. Like, I totally am when I'm in Jabba's palace. Like, I'm present for that. I'm present for that. And like, really, like, there's no destination that I'm trying to get to. Like, that's where we are. Whereas here, I feel like there's a next scene to get to. And maybe it's because there's not like a band. There's not like a diegetic band doing something to like make us feel at home there.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good call. Because is this literally the only one that doesn't have some sort of, I think.
Off the top of my head, it's like, at least for such extended periods of time, because like in Attack of the Clones, we just briefly go into the, you know, on Coruscant. But it's not like we are hanging out there.
Right.
But like here we spend a lot of time like at the gambling table, and both times, beginning and, you know, also at the end of the movie, it's not a live band.
Yeah. Is there a band on Canto Bight?
Yeah.
Why can't I think of that right now?
don't know. They're playing like in a hallway. And then there's also like a even like a little piano thing that comes in. And then there's like that opera singer briefly.
Maybe. Yeah, I remember the opera singer. Maybe it's just because that is I'm not a Last Jedi hater, but I do not enjoy the Canto Bite section.
Yeah. I know. I do enjoy it, but I do understand how the band there, even though it is still a band, it still counts for me. It is a little bit different because we're Canto Bight Casino is so many rooms and levels that we're like in so many different places in the casino. It doesn't feel quite as like intimate.
And too brightly lit.
It is brightly lit.
I understand why it is. It fits what they're going for, but.
But here it is darkly lit and no band. I guess that's my criticism for the scene is.
Yeah.
You needed a band. You need a band.
Yeah. I mean, they had it, I guess, you know, they kind of had, or they at least had the singers in the,
on the Drytons,
yacht. Yeah.
Yeah. So. But they skimped on the band there too. They just had backing tracks and the singers.
Yeah.
At least they tried. Times are
they
tough.
Tried. They tried. Yeah, exactly.
Budgets. Look, I know
it's much like the current music.
I know, I know from the gig life. Sometimes the artist doesn't have. Yeah. Sometimes they just need to use their backing tracks. Can't pay for a band. But anyway, before we get to the Star Wars Music Minute questionnaire, I'm going to run through some questions. So thank you, Alex, for submitting these on Discord. These are for you, Tony.
Okay.
As a percussionist, what do you notice about film scores that you might not without your drumming experience?
As a percussionist, what do I... Wait, say that one more time? I'm sorry.
Because you're a percussionist, you surely must notice things in film scores that when you talk to your non-percussion friends, they don't notice. What do you think some of those are?
Boy... I don't know. I've never really thought about it. I do maybe think that there is like a subconscious thing I think that happens that I don't realize it. And then someone might point out that I'm doing it is like, if there is like some sort of like rhythm to what's happening is if it's not just some like droney score or something, if there's some sort of pulse to it and there's like a rhythm to catch on to, like I usually will catch on fairly quick, and like maybe sometimes I'll start like then tapping it along with it on my leg or something and I don't even realize I'm doing it. So I guess maybe something like that. Otherwise I can't really think of a way that I, because as I said, the score a lot of times just sort of, I'm gonna say it disappears to me, but you know, again, it does its job for me of just kind of enhancing the scene.
That makes sense. So like you subconsciously pick up on rhythms. I mean, yeah, that definitely. Yeah. Okay. Have you ever created a novelty song about Han? And if so, can you play it for us now? You don't have to play it for us now, but have you created a novelty song about Han?
I have, yeah.
Oh.
Because it's real dumb. Because a couple years ago, I was doing a thing where I was writing a new song every week about a different Star Wars character. It was kind of a like challenge to myself of like, this is going to force me to write music. And I did. And yeah, there was a Han Solo song. I liked it. Okay. It was, I mean, they were all meant to be silly as well. So
are they on your Patreon? Yes.
They were. They are not.
They were. Anymore. You took them down.
Yeah, well, because I changed my whole thing. I was like, I'm not doing this anymore, and shifted all my focus to Bizarre albums and other things. So, yeah.
Understood. Next question. You've worked on podcasts with very solid nerd cred and with multiple people who have done voiceover work for Star Wars. Would you ever do voiceover work for Star Wars? And if you would, what kind of character would you want to play?
Absolutely, I would. Man, I don't think I would care, honestly. Like, if they just came to me and was like, hey, you want to do this? The question would barely be out of their mouth before I was saying yes. Yeah. And I would just truly not care. But if it was, like, ultimately up to me, I don't know, probably, like, some kind of fun. Hey, I've already forgotten the species. I'll be a therm scissor punch alien.
A nephron.
Yes, there we go, a nephron. Not therm, but, you know.
a different one.
And it does, you know, and we don't need to call a ton of attention to him, but just a like quick line as a, you know, passing by. Anything.
I totally would too. Finally, you've done a ton of audio production and performance. In how many different venues did you see Solo? And how would you evaluate its audio quality in the home theater setting where it will be mostly experienced from now on?
Boy, I'm for the second part of that, I'm just going to say I don't have an answer.
Yeah.
I like, I don't either. as much like audio work as I do, like I'm not like hyper focused on it, and like I'm very much of like, yeah, that works. Like I don't like really like focus in on, I gotta like mess with the EQ and get this absolutely perfect, because most of the stuff I do, especially these days with podcast stuff, is usually just voices talking, you know. I don't need to mess with that too much. So like as far as like home sound, all that, I don't nerd out on that stuff, so I'm sorry, but I have no answer to that. And actually, as the first part though, I'm realizing I may have only seen this once in the theater, which is very rare for me with a Star Wars movie.
Oh,
and it's not because I didn't like it. I do enjoy this movie, but I can't think of, I think I only saw it the one time. I saw it like opening day, first showing, which I always try to do. But yeah, I think that's the only time I saw it in the theater.
I only saw it once too, but it's typical for me to see things once.
I usually, the Star Wars movies, I'm usually, often I will see them again, like very, like sometimes the very next day or something. I'll go
again.
Wow.
Yeah.
But yeah, a lot of, I think the most I think Force Awakens I saw like 5 times. I think that's the most I've ever
done. I saw that twice, but just because, you know, see it with a different person.
Yeah.
And then same with Rise of Skywalker. I saw it by myself and then I saw it with a friend. But I always see it first by myself. The first screening first screening on opening day that I can by myself. Mm-hmm. And then if I see it again, it's usually because I'm going with someone. But yeah. I'm also not a home theater like aficionado by any means.
Yeah.
I think I like spend so much time doing audio music stuff in general that I kind of like plain, simple, normal for other stuff. Yeah. But okay, now it's time for the Star Wars Music Minute questionnaire.
Wait, hey, real quick before you do, what was the, you said something earlier about a question somebody sent, and I can't remember what, because you referred to it, and I was like, oh, I'm curious what this is going to be. Was it one of those? Or would, I forget why you said
when
it.
When I said about the soundtracks?
Maybe?
No. I said that. Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay, where I said that you're not going to answer it, probably. But I think I...
Something like that, yes.
Yeah. It was, as a percussionist, what do you notice about film scores that you might without your drumming experience? So I kind of rephrased it to be less... Because I thought that you would instinctively say, like, I'm just a simple drummer. I don't know, whatever.
I mean, it's true.
But yeah, your answer made sense. It kind of was along those lines, but it was like, yeah, I think it made sense.
All right.
Okay. So it's time for the Star Wars Music Minute questionnaire, which is the same 3 questions that I ask every guest. And this is your first time answering the questionnaire. So here we go. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. Question number 1. In exactly 3 words, what does Star Wars sound like?
Before I say those 3 words, why am I even saying this? I was going to say, I wasn't sure if this question was about the Star Wars music or Star Wars in general. And then I realized it's the same answer, I think. It doesn't matter.
And it's purposely cheesy. It's purposely open to interpretation.
Okay. My cheesy answer is excitement, celebration, fun.
Nice. No one's given that answer. That's a wholly unique answer.
Is there a common one that's used a lot?
Yeah, it's interesting. Like there, I on the season finale of A New Hope season, I read all of the answers that everyone gave for the whole season, And there are definitely some common through lines. Like some people go straight to music, like musical specifics. Like someone said minor planing triads or some, you know, things like that. Like, you know, yeah. And some people said stuff like sweeping orchestral, blah, 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 blah. Some people go straight to the sound design. So like some people, like a few people gave answers that were like, like, you know, just making Star Wars sounds. Yeah. Like there were several, like that was more than, at least more than three people who just gave like onomatopoeic answers. And then there were some people that said emotional things, kind of like you, but no, I wouldn't say this, this is kind of emotional, but like descriptive in a more thematic kind of way, like this, like some, so some people would say stuff like inspiring or just other types of words, dramatic, romantic, things like that. So no one has given these exact three words. And then some people, one person said James Earl Jones, one person said John fucking Williams. And so, yeah, the answers are kind of like all over the place. Yeah. It's neat.
Yeah.
Question number two, what is something related to Star Wars music or sound that you're curious about and or want to learn more about?
I would say that I nerd out much more on like the sound design stuff than I do actual score. Cause like I mentioned this earlier, maybe I did. I may like watching making ofs more than the actual movies. And like I can just watch that stuff all day long, and like especially when they get into like Ben Burtt, how he created so many of these sounds and stuff. I just love that stuff. I can eat it up. And I wish somebody would make like just a full-on documentary like about that. Like only like about Ben Burtt and all the sounds he came up with. And because I mean, you could say the same thing about the score with Star Wars, but like imagine Star Wars without Ben Burtt.
Impossible.
Yeah. It's like I don't think he gets enough credit for how huge of a thing it is that he did.
Maybe it's the circles that I, maybe it's because of this podcast, but I feel like he does get a lot of credit. I feel like a lot of people love him, and
sure, but I think maybe the common person that likes Star Wars but doesn't like, you know, nerd out and learn who all these background characters are and you know, read the books and all this. I don't think, I mean, you know, while they might think, oh, there's cool sounds, they probably don't know the name Ben Burtt and, you know, that's all I mean.
Yeah. I mean, I'm endlessly fascinated by that too. There are a couple documentaries that I'll text you later and I'll put in the show notes, but there is this
I've probably seen them.
Yeah, you probably have. But listeners, like there is this, I think in-depth sound design, it's a YouTube channel. I think they put together a compilation of like all these different things that Ben Burtt has said in interviews, and they like have it really organized. So you can go, you can click on like the A New Hope one, and it'll show the timestamps of him talking about TIE fighters, then him talking about Chewbacca, then him talking about R2, then him talking about TIE fighters, him talking about the Death Star. And you can like just jump to whichever one you're interested in and hear like, yeah, it's a great resource that I, you know, have referred to a lot for this show. But okay. Yeah. So basically how Ben Burtt comes up with sounds like Ben Burtt. Ben Burtt extravaganza. Mm-hmm. And the last question is, what is a score or soundtrack that you're fond of besides anything Star Wars?
So what came to mind for me, cause it's rare for me to any like sound score that's memorable to me, like 99% of them I feel like are John Williams. Like it's just so hard
and
to
that's
compete
fine.
With that. Yeah. However, I will say like the only other composer I feel like that ever has had things where like that actually stood out to me, although not always in a positive way necessarily, but mostly positive, is Danny Elfman. Because I do love the Pee-wee's Big Adventure score in particular. And specifically the Breakfast Machine song. I think that song rules. I once saw... doubling down on my nerdiness here. In like the late 90s, I went and saw Primus. And before they went on...
Is that a band or a film?
The band, Primus. Okay. Yes. Just real weirdos. An incredible bass player. Just incredible drum. Like, just real weird music. Before they came out, the Breakfast Machine song was playing, and like it got the crowd pumped. Like everybody was like clapping along with it and like ready like for the show. Then it was the last thing we heard before the band came out, and I was like, this is a perfect use of this song. But then on the other side of that is I do think the Danny Elfman scores sometimes can get a little redundant, because they're like, so much of it is boom, 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 and like he loves that that bass pattern or whatever you want to call that.
He kind of has a lot of rhythm. Yeah, not to get into Danny Elfman, I feel the same way about Danny Elfman. I love Danny Elfman, and also sometimes it's like, this is very Danny Elfman, very Danny Elfman.
Yeah, it's not hard to identify when it's him. Which isn't necessarily a bad thing.
Exactly.
Like, if anything, that's, But I do think mostly his stuff is good. And it, like I said, he's really the only other one that, like, stands out to me.
So, Pee-wee's Big Adventures by Danny Elfman is your answer.
Solo, nice. Just one adventure.
Oh, Pee-wee's Big Adventure.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay. Well, I definitely have heard, I've listened to that, but I haven't seen it. So
really? Okay. I mean, it's very silly, obviously.
Oh, maybe I have seen it. I think it was on Netflix.
If you don't know specifically Breakfast Machine, look it up.
I will. Maybe I've already starred it on Spotify or something. Hearted it. Pee Wee Herman went to my school. So he's like there are certain like figures, you know, like when you go to a school and there's like certain alumni figures that everyone talks about under their breath, like, Pee Wee Herman is like one of those where it's like, oh, is he going to come to the Halloween party? Did you know that Pee Wee Herman did this? Did you know that?
That's it. It's your school as in college or like where you grew up?
College.
Okay. And where'd you go to college?
CalArts.
Okay. Gotcha.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Tim Burton is another one. So they're always mentioned together. Like, lots of tall tales, those two.
He directed Pee-wee's Big Adventure, so there you go.
Listeners, there the themes from this set of minutes were Rebel Fanfare and Emphasis Nest 1, and in the soundtrack we're on Sabacc Game 3M25, which is the same thing as Is This Seat Taken? And Tony, where can people find you and your many projects online? And your Patreon revamp, what's that? What's happening?
I'm at Tony Thaxton on Twitter and Instagram. My podcast is Bizarre Albums. Those come out every Tuesday. They're just short 15, 20-minute episodes, always about a specific album I'll do a ton of research on. Never making fun of them. I'm legitimately just fascinated by them. Albums released by actors, athletes, fictional characters, things like, or sometimes a band that just took a weird direction suddenly out of nowhere, things like that. If you like that kind of stuff, check that out every Tuesday. And then the Patreon is just bonus episodes of that show that focus on singles. Like I said, there's a Lapty Neck. I have several Star Wars episodes and these, and that's patreon.com/bizarrealbums. The main other thing really that I'll promote right now, because I have too many things and I'll take up too much time, the Motion City Soundtrack
Tour
starts in June. So June and July will be all over the U.S. and actually a couple U.K. festivals as well.
Awesome. I'm so glad you got to go on tour.
Yes, fingers crossed that happens.
Right, right.
It was supposed to happen in January.
So any Motion City Soundtrack fans, maybe by the time you're listening to this, maybe there's still a ticket in your city. Maybe.
Yes. So get them.
Yeah. Did you say there was one more? You're in another band too, right?
I have a band called Don't Stop or We'll Die. It's a very silly band, and there's also a podcast with for them that I produce the show and also play drums every week on the new song. It's called Song a Week by Don't Stop or We'll Die. Very silly, just music.
You do a lot of stuff. And listeners, you can find Star Wars Music Minute on Twitter and Instagram and TikTok. You can follow Star Wars Music Minute on any of the podcast networks. And if you listen to it on YouTube, then you can do that on YouTube. That was a redundant thing to say. Also, we have a Patreon, and by we, I mean, it's patreon.com/chrysanthitan, which is just my full name, but, it is a repository for, Star Wars Music Minute and other musical experiments. And we have a Discord server, and we just did our first Star Wars role-playing game session last weekend. And it was my very first time, and I sucked probably, but it was really fun. And I can't believe it took me this long to do any sort of Star Wars RPG. But anyway, now I'm inducted, and now I'm going to get super into it, I'm sure. So anyway, that's it for this episode. Thank you for listening. Next week, we'll be diving into minutes 61 through 65 of Solo, which rumor has it we might meet the Millennium Falcon. So be sure to come back and see how that goes. May the Force be with you, and thank you for listening to Star Wars Music Minute.